What would be a piece of advice that you would want to offer them as they're starting out?
Don't work in aviation.
No! Cut that, please. Cut that. Hi, I'm Kathy Joe with Aviation Center of Excellence, and this is Aviation Uncovered, a podcast dedicated to uncovering insightful conversations, powerful stories, and expert advice, all from people who absolutely love aviation. Today's episode, we're going to be talking about the need and the importance for developing highly skilled aviation mechanics and where as an industry we went wrong. I'd like to introduce my guest today, Jose Rodriguez, president of TXG. Amos Rodriguez, CEO and AE of Seven Air. Mario Abad, principal at TXG and CEO of Aerothrust. And Carlos Koch, CEO of TXG. And just for transparency, Aviation Center of Excellence is within the TXG family. So you're going to have the opportunity to sit around the family dinner table with us and listen in on some conversations. So let's start off with some facts. So according to one report, in 2021, our workforce in 2021 was 195,000 certificated aviation mechanics. That's down from 2015's 342,000. They're saying right now we currently have a shortfall of 12,000 to 18,000, and this is according to the Global Fleet and MRO forecast. In 2027, we're anticipating up to 48,000 shortages of certificated mechanics. Currently, the workforce, 35% of them are between the ages of 55 and 64. Most are over the age of 40. So we're kind of in a critical area right now. So this is not new. We have known about this coming for years.
Yes.
Jose, what do you think kind of led to us, or how did we get into this situation?
Well, I believe that a lot of this relates to perception, the way aviation and technicians are being viewed by the younger generation. It's portrayed as a dirty job. And a lot of the kids nowadays don't want to be dedicated. They focus on mental health, and they don't want to be dedicated to a position where most of us, as we were growing up, would have to work extra long hours and really make a name for yourself in order to succeed within aviation. In our experience, we've had many recruits from Baker, Embry-Riddle, from Broward College that have come into our workforce at Extreme. And shortly after, they decide that this is not for them, after they got their AMP. They said this is too stressful. It's too harsh. It's a harsh environment. Long hours. Most of the time they have to work nights, and they decide that it's just not for them, and they prefer to work at McDonald's flipping burgers for $20 an hour. I think it's something that has been portrayed, and we're not showcasing the benefits for those who love aviation. Some of those benefits. Yeah. Being traveling, getting to know the world, all while getting paid.
So how can we shift that perception? This is a tough industry. There's no doubt. There's a lot of hard work that goes into this. But if you look at just about any other industry, whether you're a professional and you've gone through 10 years of college, that's a lot of hard work and dedication. This is not that different. So there is hard work and dedication. You have to have that. So how do we shift that perception to, you had said this is a dirty job. How do we shift that?
So one thing that we have done is really target social media, target the young audience, and showcase the perks of aviation. Aircrafts and modern day aircrafts are not as dirty as aircrafts that most of us worked on, DC-8s, DC-10s, 727, 707. Those aircrafts, you would pop the cowling open and 2 minutes into the shift, you're covered in dirt, grease, oil. Nowadays, everything is electronic. We have to showcase that. We have to show it on social media, show them that it's a lucrative career and that it has many benefits that they can obviously entertain and be part of.
So obviously you guys have been around for a little while. You've been in the industry. So why did you stick around? What is it that kept you going back?
The passion for aviation.
So what is that passion? What are you passionate about?
Just for me, it's seeing a problem and knowing that I can find the solution. And then getting to the solution, it creates a drive in me that makes me want the bigger problems, tackling the next biggest problem. So for me, that's what drove me to continue the aviation career.
Uh-huh. Okay. What about you guys? Anybody else? What are you passionate about with aviation?
If I may, I think more than the passion, it also gives a lot of younger kids, and I'm speaking from experience, personal experience, a chance to do something out of the ordinary. I think that a lot of kids and a lot of households, there's young kids finishing high school that don't necessarily want to go to college. Mm-hmm. They're looking for other avenues. And that was my case. You know, I didn't necessarily want to go to college. I found aviation through a counselor at school and fell in love with it. But when I went to school, got my AMP, and started working as a mechanic, I realized, you know what? This is not as fun as I thought. I'm getting dirty every day. The longer the hours, the dirtier I would come home because, like Jose said, you know, the aircraft were older. And as a rookie, you're giving the worst task. So now we have to change that with the younger kids, the new generation. They're very techie. So I think getting to experience right from the beginning the technical aspect of aviation and not necessarily the mechanical aspect of, you know, the aviation industry, it's a benefit which we as young kids didn't have before.
So speak to that a little bit, the technical aspect of it.
So the technical aspect of it, more of the troubleshooting aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And with the new technology on aircraft now, you know, it becomes easier. You have computers that if once you learn how to read them, they're actually going to isolate the fault for you, and they're going to tell you what exactly is wrong with the airplane. Mm-hmm. Versus before, like Jose said, we had to get dirty.
It was more mechanical.
Yeah. So, you know, in my personal case, like I was saying, I didn't enjoy that aspect of it. And I realized, you know what, there's more to this, because as I started learning, I said, well, you know, the management side of it, it's mm-hmm. also, you know, a field that, wow, I was passionate about. And I started getting more and more into the management aspect of it, but already knew the technical aspect of it. So, you know, it combined perfectly with what I found out I wanted to do.
So I think you bring up a really interesting point. So there's a lot of perception around that being an aviation mechanic is that's all you are, is a mechanic. But the advances in technology are incredible. We've got AI, we've got virtual reality, we've got drones that people are using right now, all in helping with repairing airplanes. But we've also got a vast growth opportunity within the industry too. So if you're not digging, you know, being out there working on the airplane, there is opportunity to continue to grow and still be in an industry that you love.
100%. And, you know, it's not every aspect of aviation is for everybody. Mm-hmm. But I think once you're able to get in and break ground, break the ice, you're pretty much able to map out where you would like to work, because there's so many options. You know, there's planning that goes into it.
Yep.
The actual records keeping portion of it, mm-hmm. even the finance portion of it. I mean, it's so wide. All careers are involved regardless.
Yeah.
So.
And that's something that ACE that we're trying to do is not just help develop mechanics, but help them throughout the entirety of their career too, to grow into leadership roles, to get some of those advanced trainings that they might be looking for. So if you love being a mechanic, great. We will help you be better at it. If you want to grow into the industry, we've got options to help you grow as well.
Correct.
Yeah.
Interest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we are sharing the point of view of two young guys.
Relatively young guys.
Yeah, relatively young.
Thank you, but
the aviation for Amos and me is different.
Talk about
okay. that. Okay. So because for us, aviation is culture. It's something that excited us when we were young. Aviation was this high-level opportunity because it was very small. Mm-hmm. And those times, we didn't have the deficiency for pilots or the deficiency of mechanics. Getting to this industry was glorious, was something that you were proud of.
Yeah.
And that...
And not everybody had the chance.
And not everybody had the chance. As the industry grew, it changed the politics of the industry. Mm-hmm. Now it became a business. It became performance. It became you have to do this to do this. It got more regulated. Yeah, so at the point of the regulations that start coming in, it was more pressure on your employees and your people. So that pressure for younger kids that don't have the ambitions of going forward like these two gentlemen here, that's why they are here, because out of 100, you got two that have the ambition to go forward. The other ones are just, like we call, here for the money. And as we keep growing this industry and as the industry keep going forward, and these kids are starting to evolve. I mean, right now, the kids, the only thing they want is work from home, have all the benefits in the world, manage their own time, but do not pressure me. And in this industry, it's totally backwards. This industry is totally regulated. We have to follow a line.
Yeah.
We have to understand what we do, and we have to be trained and constantly evolving.
Yeah.
So... And in the other hand, what I see the biggest deficiency in the industry today is if you are a regular guy getting out of high school, where is your aviation environment? You don't have dedicated schools. The major schools do not provide aeronautical services. Everything is small colleges and small towns, and what they're teaching them is on Pipers, on the small aviation. So, and they're telling them they're going to make the money that you make in McDonald's. So,
yeah,
there is not an aviation program in this country outside Embry-Riddle or Purdue that actually motivates these thousands of high schools coming in to get into this industry. Actually, you are and have the ability to make a lot of money and make something for yourself.
Well, we're hoping to change that.
That's what we do in ACE.
One more, that's right, one more there. But yeah, it's actually an interesting point, because another reason that the industry has gotten to the point it has, and this I found very interesting, between 2000 and 2008, there was a 13% decline in aviation schools.
Yeah.
So there was a huge amount of schools that just closed down. So there's not, and it hasn't really picked back up yet. So the schools just aren't out there teaching the students the way they used to be.
Yeah, it's I tell you, in Auto Trust, when we were having a lack of mechanics, we decided to let's go and get these kids out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to a couple of high school programs in different parts of the city. And we told them, come to us, we get you an A&P license. It's like we were talking French.
Yeah.
So we have to explain. But the ones that came to the program is still on the program, because you give them a path that nobody is telling them to exist. So that reaching out programs, we need to start making sure that the communities and the political guys from the communities, and they push them. And our biggest exit wasn't on high and middle class. It was in the low class neighborhoods, where these guys were used to go work as a forklift driver in a warehouse.
So that's actually, I think that's an interesting pathway there for the industry itself. So a lot of people who are in lower incomes, they go for jobs. They get what they can. And oftentimes those jobs don't really have a future. So how can we entice that? How can we show them that we do have opportunities and we'd love to have them?
So I believe we have to start with petitioning our local government to create grants so that there's funding for these public schools to be able to put together a program that is catered to aviation.
Yeah.
Especially in South Florida, you're in one of the biggest aviation communities within the United States and the world.
Yeah.
And there's no program catered to that. You have George T. Baker, which is a public school, but there's nothing really pushing the kids or funneling them to decide to go into that school. Mm-hmm. There's no marketing. There's no information being displayed anywhere. It's just, if you know, you know. I think that that's one of the main things that the government here in Florida should at least be seeking. And then aside from that, one of the things that, as you know, we're doing with ACE is reaching out to these low-income housings, mm-hmm. People that come from other countries that have mechanical experience,
yeah.
And we're going to go give them the opportunity to create a career within the United States.
Yeah.
And that's going to create and supplement a workforce that is really not being found anywhere else.
Right, right. And not given the opportunities either. So this is something that we really want to do, is try to give them opportunities. We're going to take with it they're going to take with it what they do, and that's fantastic. But giving them the opportunity, that's a beautiful door opening for them.
Yeah, if I may, you mentioned at the beginning, where did we go wrong?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that, and having witnessed myself from, ground zero, the particular programs designed in the public schools, as is George T. Baker, are not fit to the current aviation industry.
That's correct.
So kids come in there and they learn all these things that are not real life, not real world in the aviation industry. So they learn on the small aircraft, dope and fabric techniques, things that are outdated that were maybe in existence 60 years ago when the programs were created. So I think we fell miserably at designing those programs to fit the modern age, aviation world.
Or we just got complacent and didn't continually update the program.
Absolutely. So what happens, these kids start the programs, and at the end of the 2, 3, or 4 year, depending on, where they started, from 100 kids that started, you're going to have 3 or 4 that end up the program with an actual AMP license. That's about a 4%.
Yeah.
3 to 4%. Horrible. So, you get them while they're young. You get them interested enough to actually go into the school and start the process. But then you lose them along the way because it's antiquated. It's not real life. There's no real technical aspect to it. There's no modern technical aspect to it. So you lose them.
Yeah. Coming from the FAA side as well, a lot of the curriculum that the schools like George T. Baker, I was an alumni there. And like Carlos mentioned, dope and fabric and all this stuff that is antiquated. So, and it is true. Like, for instance, when I started George T. Baker, there was like 700 kids started from high school. And at the end of the 3 years, 27 of them were taking the test for an AMP license out of 700 kids. That's
exactly 4%.
And even as of today, the curriculum is still the same. It's the same. It hasn't changed because the FAA hasn't changed the testing for the AMP. They're still the same old questions, the same material. And that's one of the biggest faults where we've gone wrong.
I think, Addy.
Yeah.
I think we all are in agreement. This needs to come from the early age. It needs... One of the programs that we developed in Adiatros and Amos and Miami Tech was we used to have these high school seniors come in and spend 1 or 2 days with us. And we know that we modified the life of a lot of them because the perception that what they have was what Jose said. It's a dirty job, hard job, I get dirty, I'm going to cut my hands and all that. And then when we put them through 2 days of just observing what our people were doing. I know we have a couple of those coming years later, coming out of one of those schools, because we give them the opportunity to touch it and smell it. That is a public school program that needs to be developed in order to move forward.
I think that's beautiful. So I'm not from the aviation industry. I'm from a different background, but I got into the industry. I've always loved airplanes, but the first time I got up close and saw it, I was in awe. And if we can do that, here I go. If we can do that with those kids, if we can do that with those kids and just like create that, oh, create that awe for them, that, oh my gosh, this is so cool. And even like, you know, on bring your child to work day, you know, bringing your kids and showing what daddy and mommy can do on the airplanes. Things like that are so amazing.
You know, it makes an impact on the early age.
It does.
So I have an example particularly to that. When I was in eighth grade, I was maybe 11 or 12 years old. Our technology class, which is catered mostly around computers and typing and learning programming, had an event where they bought everybody balsa wood and you had to design your own glider.
Cool.
That was the beginning of the aviation career for me. Because when I built my first glider and I flew my first glider, I won first place for how long that glider flew. And from that moment on, I knew that I loved aviation.
So can I go around and ask every one of you how you found your passion for aviation? Because I love that story. And actually, for all of you listeners out there, if you guys can leave your comments too about if you are in aviation, what drew you in? What was that spark that created that passion for you too? I'd love to hear those stories. Amos, what about you?
I was always very mechanically inclined all through my youth. I would disassemble bikes and lawnmowers and whatever I can get my hands on. And as I got older, I started working on cars. And then I said, well, cars don't really pay that much, so let me work on airplanes then. And that's what I did. I joined George T. Baker, and there I was hooked. And then when I started getting more into aviation and doing my own, I was a technician doing the whole overhaul of the aircraft, and then I would do the test fly with the pilots. There I was sucked in. It was just in my blood, and it's been ever since.
Carlos?
So I think that, you know, catching the kids early enough, like in my case, I don't know if you guys remember or go back this far, but high school started in ninth grade back in the 80s. And so a school counselor came to the school from the high school to speak about the different careers. And she spoke specifically about the program at George T. Baker. But one of the things that I find interesting is that Mario mentioned back in those days, aviation was glamorous.
Yes.
So
it was.
When she described the different options at the school, being a technician was one of them. But being a technician that was going to be flying on these aircraft to different parts of the world, fixing them in, you know, remote spots and the glamour of it all, it caught my attention and I joined the program. Now, I was one of the few and the lucky ones that stuck to it, you know, and finished it for the 4 years and then, you know, kept on going and developed the actual passion once I started the work. But I think that's very important, bringing the glamour back into aviation.
How do we do that?
Catch the kids from when they're young.
They're young.
We need to present all the actual stuff that we know happened in the real industry. And I mean all of us here, at one point in our careers, we were dispatched to places all over the world. Sorry, Amos. One got a chance to live abroad 6 to 8 months in different countries, you know, Japan, Middle East, Dubai. All these things are glamorous to kids. And, you know, it catches their eye.
But I think the whole industry has to come together and fix it, because right now everything is about the dollar and the penny, and before, like you just mentioned, the glamour was there. Remember Pan Am, the stewards, how they wore that beautiful uniform and they were walking into the terminal and they were so proud and everybody loved that. And now that's gone. You don't see no advertising from none of the major airlines with the uniforms, and that glamour is gone from the whole industry. And I think it's going to come where the whole industry will have to come together and start that again. They have abandoned that.
Bring the glamour back.
Yes. You remember when they used to wear suits to go in first class.
Yeah.
Everybody in first class had to wear a suit.
Yep.
Now people wear pajamas.
No, you're in pajamas.
In my case, it's in the blood. My father was an aviation executive in the airlines in Colombia. And I don't know, I enjoy every time I go to work with him and see what the industry was all about.
Yeah.
Didn't want to work in the industry, though.
No?
No, but I came back from NYU, and in my way back down to Colombia, I got somebody, an old man, J.B. Mion, he says, hey, you're smart enough to help me with my airline. And I stay here. And since that day, I haven't left.
So you didn't want to follow in your father's footsteps, but somebody else pulled you in, and here you are.
Yeah, and I don't regret it a day.
Yeah.
But tell you one thing that makes me proud about this industry is when you see somebody grow. When you get a kid and you put him through the rain, you teach him everything, and when the kid comes with his head bowed and says, I'm going to Delta.
Ooh, yeah.
For me, that was our proudest moment.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because that means that we made somebody better.
Yeah.
And he went to a major airline. So that means that what we're doing
works.
Yeah.
And I think every one of us share that. Seeing people grow is our most satisfactory thing that you can ask.
That's true.
I think 60% of the people that work at United come from Extreme.
At least.
Well, one other thing, like Mario mentioned, that made me very proud was my first early years that I was with Israel Aircraft Industries here out of Miami, I trained a lot. I was like the supervisor that would train all the young kids, and I had the best team. I always had the best team, and everybody wanted to take my team because I had the best team. I had all the young kids, and I trained them properly. And true, I would keep losing them. They would go to the airlines. They would go to better jobs, better airlines that pay better. But once I started doing all these AOGs field work all around the world, I would go to Dubai and I would find somebody that was with me. Oh, hey, it's good to see you, man. And look, and that's what really made me feel good. But when wherever I would go, there was always somebody that I helped them get there.
They don't call him famous for nothing.
I think one of the things that people need to understand that in leadership role, a vast majority of your job is developing your people.
Yep.
And you need to be doing that. And I know that it's frustrating that, oh, I just got my team together and I just developed them and now they're taking them or they're leaving or this or that. But that's part of the process. That's, like you said, you should be proud and happy. It's almost like you're that proud papa of your children going off and growing up.
That's our graduation.
It's a beautiful thing.
Graduation.
Yeah.
I still have guys that call me. You know, they're with America and they're with United. They still call me, you know, to thank. So that's very rewarding.
That is something that I've seen a lot, too, is that the connections that people make, especially when they invest in their people, I don't care where they're at. You have that person for life.
Yeah, it's true.
Let's not go too far. Perfect example right there. He put in the effort to develop him.
Yeah.
And you know, show him the industry and the techniques and everything that he needed to succeed. And when he was ready, he flew, made his own path, was very successful.
Yeah.
Thanks to the beginnings.
Yeah.
Yep.
And here we are, full circle.
It's all about investing that time to develop, not only for other people, but in yourself as well. It never stops and it shouldn't ever stop.
But I feel that to start correcting some of the issues that we're having with the lack of AMPs, it's going to come from us. And if we don't do something about it ourselves, nobody's going to do it. So that's why we're here.
So it starts with us, but where does it go from there? Starts and finishes with us?
Correct. But if we start and we show other people that it is working for us,
we're going to
make the difference.
We need to lead.
Yep.
We need to set the sample. Mm-hmm. Our biggest hope is that what we're trying to accomplish here with everybody's leadership here gets duplicated by somebody else. Somebody else will take it in California, the same path. And somebody else will take it in Seattle. And so start with us. Start with us putting our efforts and our resources and our economical support of this.
Yeah.
And it will finish with us because eventually we're not looking to be rewarded. but our reward will come internally because we will get there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we cast this. Nobody's doing nothing about it.
Right.
So like you said, I think if we show that it works, other people will start adopting it.
Oh, definitely.
We need to lead. Yeah. And we are leaders here. Every one of us has been leading their own part of the industry in certain ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the most things that attracted me more to join this team here was that I saw how they've been leading people. They make the difference. Mm-hmm. I mean, in a most difficult time on the industry, which COVID, these guys succeed. And they succeed because they're leaders.
Yeah.
And they treat the people right. And that's the type of company that will attract talent. And that's what we're doing.
I think that goes back to when you were talking about stress before. Life is stress. Any job you have, there's going to be stress. And yes, aviation has a high level of responsibility associated with it, which can lead to stress. But how we treat people through that stress makes all the difference.
One thing that I learned from that old man is that you treat your head pilot on your head and the mate exactly the same.
Yep.
There's no difference between them. Everybody has a task to do. Mm-hmm. And we do that here. And we try to not only teach and guide them on the right thing, but we also have big frustrations. I saw the face of these two right here the day that we hire a guy coming in from what that school?
Oh, yes.
An excellent candidate.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't pass the drugs test. And our frustration was what we can do to help him.
Yeah.
Not how we can get rid of him.
Yeah.
What we can do to help him because he made a mistake.
And to dig into that a little bit further, we have to understand that there's a certain demographic that we're going to appeal to now in this particular time frame in our world. Well, a person that has a wealthy upbringing doesn't look at aviation as the glamorous career that it was 20 or 30 years ago. So we have to appeal to people that are looking to build a career without having to spend a lot of money in school.
And we also offer them an amazing opportunity.
And at the same time, we offer them an amazing opportunity. Yeah. So we have to know that these personnel that we're going to be attracting from these demographics are going to have situations that come up that we have to work through and get creative in ways to find solutions so that we can develop them and take them out of that world that they used to live in and put them into a world that now they say, this is glamorous. Why didn't I do this before?
Yeah. So that's an interesting point, and something that is also kind of special for me is that concept of failure. Everybody makes mistakes. Everybody fails. And oftentimes we all see that as, well, you're done now, instead of seeing it as a development opportunity, a way to learn, a way to grow. And we need that.
Yes.
You don't make mistakes, you don't grow.
That's
simple.
That's true.
The people that doesn't make mistakes are the ones that are doing nothing. They're doing nothing. You don't make a mistake because you're not doing nothing.
Yeah.
So if you make mistakes, it's because you're doing something.
So for all of you guys out there listening, understand you're going to make mistakes. That's okay.
Fess up to them.
Yeah, learn.
Own it. Own it and learn from it. Yeah, it's going to suck, but own it and learn from it. Yeah.
Yep, get up and be stronger.
Yeah, usually it is.
Because it will happen again.
Sure. But it's true. If you're not making mistakes, you're not growing.
Yeah. Yep.
You're not growing as a person, as an individual, as a professional, even, as parents.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
We make so many mistakes as parents, but, hopefully you learn from them and you grow.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've been talking about approaches to how we develop people. What are some of the best and maybe some of the worst approaches that you guys have seen?
Oh. Worst approach is ignore the problem. Always face the problem, regardless whatever it is. Don't ignore the problem. Face the problem. That's the worst approach.
Mm-hmm.
The best approach is what Amos just said. own it. Own your mistake. Grow from, absorb everybody that is around you. Mm-hmm. We seen people that are just there, because just there. But we can see the guys that are there asking you 100 questions, absorbing everything that they have from you. And those are fantastic people. Those are the leaders of the future.
Oh, absolutely. That's one of the things that I say is somebody who is asking questions and actually absorbing the information. I'm not just asking questions because it's easier to get the information from you, but asking questions and absorbing it. Those are the people that I want in my leadership programs.
Yeah, those are the leaders of the future because they are absorbing and they keep absorbing.
So as leaders, I believe that we have to lead by example.
Mm-hmm.
So in let's say the workforce at an MRO or at an engine shop or even at an airline, the person that's in charge of a particular group of people has to be the one that's indicating and making clear what is expected from them, but at the same time guiding them through the entire process so that the team that's behind them sees that there's somebody that they look up to, knows what they are doing, and they have someone that they could follow in their footsteps.
Yeah, yes.
And I think in today's society, that goes a really long way.
So not only that, but as Ina said, own it. So even as a leader, we make mistakes.
Yes.
Yep. And if you own that and your people see that, hey, I'm human, I make mistakes and I'm going to own it, I might have to eat some crow because of it, but I'm going to come out stronger. That's a beautiful example for them.
It is. It definitely is.
Yep, definitely. Yeah. But sometimes it's not easy, but you just got to keep trying. And like Jose said, just got to be honest and upfront and take care of the people. Take care of your employees the way you would like to be treated. That's how it's worked for me. Always.
Yeah. I think the days of screaming and using fear and intimidation to guide a group of people, thinking that they're going to lose their job, I think those days are long gone. Mm-hmm. I think that today's society appeals more to guidance, to working together, to teamwork, to just, you know, being overall involved in the growth of each individual leader and mechanic.
And when you were talking about the generation today, they don't want that stress. They don't want that sense of frustration. That approach, that guidance approach, they do crave that. They want to have people show me, guide me, mentor me, teach me. That's what they crave. And so if we as leaders take that approach, that might be an opportunity to be able to attract and keep more of the younger generation so that we can continue growing.
Correct.
I think the next part to that is, as companies and as leaders, developing the opportunities and presenting them properly to the individuals that you see and your team has designated as potential leaders or candidates to take up those leadership roles. The way you present those opportunities to the younger generation now, it's not the same way that those opportunities were presented to us, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago. It's a completely different environment, completely different system. And now the younger kids appeal to other things. They don't so much appeal to, you know, the opportunities that were present 30, 40 years ago to enter into leadership roles. You were more or less dictated what you needed to do. Now, you know, there's different approaches. And I think people such as yourself, you know, that have that ability and the potential to pinpoint and look at
strengths and weaknesses.
Those individuals and their strengths, their weaknesses, and where they will fit best.
And thrive.
Right.
And yeah, those programs, you know, they need to be developed from those views as well. So it's important.
So I think what you mentioned earlier about the concept of career pathways, I think that's really where we need to start, is show them these are your opportunities. We'll do everything we can to help you get there, but we will take you and you can go where you want.
Yeah, and kind of, you know, let them know from early stages, you're going to get out of this what you put into it. Because a lot of kids nowadays, they don't like to put in the work.
Well, I think a lot of them want opportunity. They want choice.
Yeah.
They don't want to be told what to do. They want to choose what to do. Yeah. So this is a way that, you know, here's the pathway. What works for you? Where do you want to go? Do you want to put in the hours? Do you want to put in the heavy labor? Do you want to work more with numbers and finance? Do you want to work more with planning? Which direction fits you better? And we can help you get there. So I have a question for you guys. Hopefully we have some listeners out there who are interested in getting into the field. What would be a piece of advice that you would want to offer them as they're starting out?
Don't work in aviation.
No. That's
opposite of what we want to say.
That's sending out the wrong
message. Don't work for us.
No.
I think it's a good joke. It's not a joke. Aviation. What happened is aviation is unique. If you think about it, have you ever seen an industry that changes, grows, have so many different paths that touch everything? I mean, if you look at an aviation company, it's a manufacturing company, it's a finance company, it's an accounting company, it's a developing company, it's a flying company. I mean, working in aviation,
logistics, technology,
it covers everything. So when I say don't work in aviation, it's because here you can sit here and look at anywhere. Look at you, or look at each one of you guys. I cannot say because I have followed the same path. And my path has always been administration and business and all that. But you guys, you started as mechanics, truly touching the product. And today you are a leader with experience, an amazing mind for business, an amazing mind in controlling, an amazing mind of leadership and looking outside the box. And an amazing manager, leader, not only in the industry. So that's when I say, hey, jokingly, don't work in aviation, because aviation covers everything. It covers every single path. And if you are not happy as a mechanic, that experience will take you to a finance role, because you're going to understand what it costs to it. If you don't write the finance goals, then you go to a technical role where you design the manuals and the training. It covers everything. There's no industry in the world that covers everything.
So don't work in aviation. Step into an industry where you can go wherever you want.
This is the world.
This is the world. It's an ecosystem.
It's the ecosystem. Yeah. Don't work in aviation is a standard joke from all men in the art. It's because these company, these type of companies, this world covers everything.
All right. Anyone else? Piece of advice?
I think that, like I was trying to say earlier, was we have to find a way. How do we get these young kids at an early age? I would say, I think high school is already, we're losing them. That's the way I see it. I think somewhere in the end of middle school, somewhere around the 7th or 8th grade, they got to have field trips to where maybe there's an air show or a museum with aviation or something like that, that would, something will enter into their body and curiosity. Say, this is what I want to do. And I think that's what, we have to work on that
a little bit more.
Okay.
Yeah, so on our side, you know, aviation is a beautiful thing. And in my honest opinion, there's so much to aviation, but the particulars of, like, you know, there's a lot of people that get into stocks and they like trading stocks and doing crypto and they sit in the computer and do that. You can do something very similar in the aviation industry with aircrafts. Mm-hmm. You have a team of guys that are willing to fund projects, and you could flip aircrafts all day long. Not exactly like that. It's not as easy as it sounds, but you can get into a particular aspect of aviation where you do not have to do the dirty work, where you don't have to be an inspector, where you don't have to even look at the paperwork. You could have literally just an asset that's placed in front of you, and you get to analyze the asset and find the home for it. And it's something completely different. And that's one of the things that we do now that kind of excite me. I love the flips. I think that it's lucrative. It does really well for the company. And they're exciting when you buy an asset that is that magnificent.
Carlos.
So that's one aspect of it. Like Mario said, this industry is so vast that it can ignite interest in any single field, you know, and that's the beauty of it. Getting the kids from a young age, you know they're going to be interested in one portion of it, but it's all aviation. It all entails. Aviation entails every single aspect of business, finance, travel, logistics, supply chain, you know, all these different fields. So it's a world of opportunity.
So I think that from our discussions today, some of the things that we got out of this was that we as an industry need to outreach earlier and a little bit more often.
I agree.
I think that we also need to change the perception that stepping into a role as an aviation mechanic is all that there is. That this is a like you said, this is everything and encompasses everything. And so the career pathways, the opportunities that you have to grow in this industry are unlimited. And we need to do a better job of sharing that, of talking about that, of putting that message out there. And I think opportunities like this where we're talking about things that make us passionate, you know, that this is what draws us to this and sharing these stories, I think that goes to sharing the passion with other people as well. And creating that passion for aviation is going to go back to that prestige that the industry has. So we've got a long way to go. It's not going to be just us. It has to be a lot more people. Yes. We've got to get politicians involved. Yes, we've got to get other aviation executives involved. We need to get the managers at each location, you know, everybody involved in changing this perception. And hopefully through doing so, we'll be able to start attracting and retaining more people within the industry, no matter how they grow through it.
I think a small step, or a very small step that individual companies can do, and that's for all the listeners out there, if you own your own aviation company, invest into a social media marketing team and portray the actual work that you do in your hangar. Create trends, create content that portrays what you do within your facility, and let the world see it. I think that's going to start triggering more people to get curious about aviation. And I know Bernie, which is behind the cameras right now, he's done an excellent job at Extreme Aviation. Follow us on Instagram. It's growing every single day. And we see our videos are getting millions of views now. So there's definitely an interest in what we do.
If we catch a few young brains or a few young minds with those videos and get them interested, then we're doing our job. You know, and if other companies follow along, like Jose says, it could create a movement.
So let's put this out there as a challenge for all you other MROs, aviation industry people, everybody out there. Let's see how we can utilize social media to start spreading the word, to start sharing passion, to start showing people those career pathways so that we can stir up that interest a little bit more. So I think this is a good place to stop. This has been a really great conversation. Thank you guys very much. I want to thank you, the listeners. I want to thank our guests, Jose Rodriguez, Anas Rodriguez, Mario Abad, Carlos Cox, and I want to thank you guys again. I'm so grateful to have you here again for our inaugural podcast. These podcasts will continue going, and together, hopefully, we'll be able to start uncovering some of that passion and love for aviation that we all have, and hopefully you guys can have too. Looking forward to the next time we can chat. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.